Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country. And there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. I want to thank everybody that's been reaching out to us about Tim's health. He is getting better. He's fighting bronchial issues and should be up and running, or at least up and limping pretty soon here. He is getting better on a daily basis, and I think your prayers, thoughts, and good intentions, white light, all the energy you guys are sending to him has definitely been an influence on him, not only physically but mentally. I see it recharging him, so thank you all for doing that. You have no idea how much that means to your buddies here on Beyond the Darkness. Today, we're going to talk with our guest, The Naked Witch. That's the autobiography by Fiona Horn. She launched a career in the entertainment industry as the founder and lead singer of the Australian 90s rock band Def FX. She has authored a number of best-selling books about modern witchcraft and was a popular radio and television personality, appearing on programs around the world, including Sci-Fi Channel's Mad Madhouse. She's here with us today to spend an hour and chat a little bit about her life, her experiences, and what a life it's been, Fiona. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Now, we've got, I want to let people know, you are out in St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and you guys really took a battering from that hurricane.
You know, if we were going to be really accurate, we would actually say that I'm on St. Thomas, which is 38 nautical miles from St. Croix. It's where I live now. But it is an island in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And, yes, we were hammered with two catastrophic hurricanes about 4 months ago now, in September of last year, Irma and Maria. So we're still recovering.
You know, a lot of us, we watch these kind of tragedies take place, even closer to home on the shores of New Jersey and, you know, California and things along those lines. And there's this really weird disconnect. It's almost like maybe we've seen too many disaster movies, that the realization of just how devastating and traumatic those kind of natural elements can really be. It, you know, we saw bursts on the news regarding the hurricanes and the effects it had in that area. And I'm sure you've seen some of that as well. Does it live up to the reality of it? Or, you know, I mean, so much in the United States is complained about, you know, fake news and that they are amping things up to sell stories. Was it as devastating as it seemed, or has that just been overly hyped?
Well, I think what ended up on the mainstream or mainland televisions was the reportage from Puerto Rico, which is an island 78 nautical miles to the west of me that has 3 million people on it. So you saw a lot of that. Our islands didn't have as many people, so media-wise, it's not considered dramatic enough. But the suffering was very, very bad here. The infrastructure that was destroyed, the lives that were lost, the fact that one storm came and then another within 2 weeks, and then rain, so much rain for weeks after, and, you know, the mudslides and the mess, you know, I don't think seeing it on television does really place you in a position of understanding the emotional and mental trauma of it. It's the physical discomfort is whatever. I mean, my hands still ache from shoveling debris and mud and for weeks bailing out houses and loads and loads of washing and, you know, whether it was my own or helping others. I was doing a doctor's washing for a while there because the hospital was so hit so hard there was no ways of sanitizing things, and I was lucky that I had a generator. I could run a couple of hours a day and do the doctor's laundry, and it's just, you know, these... No, the TVs don't do it. TV reports don't do it justice. And it's the smaller things, the day-to-day stuff. I was without power for 121 days, which sounds like a long time. I was just grateful to get it at all in the end. You sort of adapt, and everyone here on the island that didn't leave would talk about our new normal. This is our new normal. And we all got used to it. And the positives was that it brought out a remarkable sense of community. People that didn't know each other all of a sudden became very close, and we all helped each other. We, you know, it brought people together even as much as the storms tore us and our island home apart. And the other thing I could say about it is that you don't realize when you watch it on TV is that death and destruction smells. It smells really bad. And I think in people who, like when I say smell, it's like it literally smells like death is not pretty. And I think in the paranormal scene, and certainly in the witchcraft and maybe magically oriented scene and the occult scene, death is glamorized as being something desirable and interesting, you know. But death stinks. Decaying bodies and vegetation and dirty water, it smells, and you get infections and sores, and death isn't pretty when it's in your face like that.
I can only imagine.
It goes on not for days, but weeks. And even now, you know, as you and I talking, Dave, just before we got on air together, it's like I'm sitting in a car park. Yeah, I'm on an island. I'm in a car park because there's still no internet. There's still no phone service. I'm grateful we have anything at all, but I've got to drive to a spot that's in view of a tower, sit really still in the hot car park to get enough signal to chat with you right now. And it's months later. So these are the things that the news doesn't really make sense of either. You know, if we're going to keep continuing our modern life that we're expected to show up to and conduct, we're doing it in really kind of challenging circumstances, as luxurious as our problems are. Hey, I'm sitting in a car and I have a car, you know, it's like my luxurious problems.
That's a great way to look at it. You're still thankful and grateful for the things that you still have. And I think more people around the world need to have that kind of attitude. Now, let me ask you something, if I may. And again, Fiona, I'm not a witch or Wiccan, so I'm not, you know, what I've learned through the years is simply through attrition of talking to people. But a lot of the practices and principles have to do with the elements and have to do with earth and such. Is there an upheaval that you're sensing or aware of that's going on? Is there some kind of rebirthing? Is that why there are so much violent storms, earthquakes, volcanoes starting to awaken? Do you have any kind of feel for that with what's currently going on around the world?
Well, it's interesting what you say. From my perspective as a pagan, as a witch, as someone that honors nature as sacred, and I, you know, my version of the Bible is Mother Earth. I look around at what's going on in the land and the lives of animals, plants, everything around me, and I get some kind of perspective on how to conduct myself. You know, that's my church is nature, you know, for want of a better way of describing it. So I really, just me, my opinion, my idea, my thought, I grappled trying to understand. Like, I remember being inside the house in the room, but the tiny room that was the safe room, sort of maybe safe. We didn't know if the roof was going to blow off or tornado was going to hit on us. The house next to me was gone. My house is standing. I'm in it, you know, and I'm looking out this little window at the storm outside, and this was the first one, Irma, and it was like the world was in a washing machine. It was this gray, like everything that was once green and blue and flowers and was gone, and it was just grey, broken, mush, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for hours and hours and hours and hours through this little window. And I remember thinking, how can this be nature's will? And in the aftermath of it, like walking outside, that first step outside and land is gone. It's like everything is broken and destroyed. Trees are like matchstick snaps and everything's broken and gone. And you're like, how is this level of annihilation necessary in Mother Nature's scheme of things? What is its purpose? And I looked at it from a spiritual perspective, trying to understand what can I learn from this? You know, you're bewildered, you're shocked. I mean, people that are experts in this matter say that I have post-traumatic stress disorder from this storm. It's like the fact that I still can't look at pictures and I get a feelings in me that it's hard to understand when I think about the storm. But in the aftermath of it, a month later, I'm looking out at the island now and it's green again, and it's like everything's recovered. Nature recovered very fast. Humans took longer. Animals were back very quickly. We just had a lot more iguanas and a lot more cats. Birds eventually came back and they started eating the mosquitoes again. So the clouds of mosquitoes that were struggling with the insects were so bad when all the vegetation was gone. I mean, you know, things came back. What I learned was there are now plants and flowers blooming and growing, like prospering here on island that haven't in over 20 years since the last hurricane. So a certain smothering vine that was really a dangerous, like a really destructive element on island, introduced vine species is gone. This ugly orange vine that used to grow all over is gone. Like, and you see that, like friends of mine who've been here through other hurricanes 20 years ago said, wow, there's things growing there that haven't been able to grow for a long time. And, you know, that's what, when nature comes through with this sledgehammer, just take it all down. It's so things can grow. I remember as a gardener, when I had a garden living in California, I used to prune the trees every season. I would prune them to the fruit trees to bring more fruit out. The plants, my gardenias, bushes, I would prune them really hard to bring the flowers out. Like, so nature prunes. And, you know, sometimes the only way for things to move forward is to take everything away and cut it all back.
Right, wash back the choking, nagging, smothering bits and allow what was originally there to breathe again. Do you think that is kind of
more things to take root again? Yeah, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, do you think that is a form of magic, that kind of resuscitation of land and people that occurs from time to time, that it's this, you know, I mean, whether it's asteroids pummeling the Earth and throwing us into ice age or this?
Yeah, I think you point out it's a very good point. I think it is. It's a way of things. It's nature's way. And, you know, we would be best served to accept it, respect it, and honor it and learn from it. I kind of find in my overall life, I mean, you mentioned my book that's just come out, the autobiography. It's like there's something I say in that which comes to mind as we're talking. My life has been my life is a process of becoming less, not more. I've done a lot of things in my life and been sort of had jobs where it's exposed me to a lot of public exposure or whatever. But I try to live, I'm grateful to live a simple life now. And I actively try to be less, not more, which is a very different way of living to how I used to live in the past. And the way the hurricane and when they did in my personal life, just me, and the effect they had on me was it was a similar sort of another step in the direction of being grateful for what we have, and not wanting more, just being grateful for what is.
I appreciate that kind of concept as well. I was reading in the press release and information regarding your book that in the 70s, here you're this 10-year-old girl. You build this kind of altar in the bushland of your home in Sydney, and it's stones, leaves, flowers, all these offerings for these animal friends and these mystical creatures of your imagination. Was this wonder and magic always kind of around you, or was this something that was conceptualized through your parenting, or, you know, how did that happen?
Definitely not through my parenting. No, I think it was something that was innate in me. And I was a voracious reader as a child. And I grew up before social media and Nintendo and all that kind of stuff, PlayStation. You know, Mum would just send us out into the bush and say, go and play kids' dinners at six, you know. And I think that's how I stumbled upon this idea that, that magic was sacred and divine. As much as I was reading books that supported the idea that there was an enchanted land out there, out in the open, out in the wild, and I was just lucky to be allowed to explore it. And it, as I sort of actively reconnected with that sense of self in my teens and moving into my 20s and everything, you know, as an active practicing witch, it all made sense. It came full circle. And it continues, you know, to be full circle. It's funny when people ask me, you know, what do you, you've done so much in your life, what's next? And I realize that every, if I have any plans, it's not plans that, oh, I want to visit this city or I want to go to this museum or this building or this, you know, or meet this person, or it's always like, where in the world do I want to go? Like, I want to go to the deserts of Mongolia, the frozen wilderness of Alaska, the, you know, I'm always thinking about nature. It's like, I want to explore nature. It's in my heart more than anything else.
Your life, you know, kind of awakening to this magical realm, this thing, and it mentions these kind of imaginary, mythical creatures. To you, were they imaginary, or do you believe that because of your youth and because of the innocence of youth, you weren't seeing imaginary things? You were, in fact, connecting with eternals, elementals, beings of that sight, you know, of that sort.
I think it's a really interesting observation you make. I think, look, my understanding of it is that the veils between the worlds were thin back then before I became adult-orated. You think of that word and what it kind of means and how you can break it down. As a child, I didn't question anything. I accepted things as being, and I felt things and I saw things, and whether they were tangible entities unto themselves or the projected consciousness of other of human thoughts, and on a quantum level I was tapping into it, it doesn't matter. It all felt very real and very tangible. And as an adult, when I've had specific experiences with paranormal entities, for want of a better term, that felt equally real and tangible because I don't question it. I accept it and I'm a willing conduit, and then it comes through and I have that experience. So I write a little bit about that in my book, like connecting with my father's ghost, for want of a better way of describing it. He didn't feel ghostly in the moments I spent with him. It felt very real, physical, but if he was a ghost because he was physically dead. But, yeah, I definitely think as a child you have a natural, you can naturally trust things, experiences like that, because you haven't been taught to not trust it. And then as adults, sometimes when we want to tangibly explore the world of paranormal, we have to kind of become like children again, open to all potential.
You've had all this tragedy around you right now where you live, and as you said, death was all around. Has there been a paranormal spiritual awakening again on that island because of the death, or was that something where people transitioned cleanly and clearly with the weather? If you follow my gist, I mean, did the spirits make way, or are they kind of stuck in that plateau?
You know, it's funny, through all of this, I've never, like, I lost two friends in the storm, and one in a mudslide, and one, we think she was lost at sea. We don't know for certain. And I felt her really strongly, like intensely, because her mother's here looking for us, still hoping she might be alive, and I've been helping with that search. But I felt her really strongly, but I can't tell whether she's physically alive or passed over. I just feel her, but I don't know where she is. And my other friend who passed in the mudslide, he's passed over. He seems very peaceful. And then I haven't sensed a lot of other energies to do with physically, like human death. I felt a lot of the natural world. I've been more plugged into that sense of letting go and rebirth than human. Like when I say natural, I mean non-human. So animals too. I've sensed more of that transitionary energy than and human energy, which is interesting because you think I'd be walking around and, you know, seeing shadows all over the place, but I'm not. It's like the human element seems kind of at rest, and the animal and vegetation element is where I get a lot of kind of paranormal activity feelings.
When the storms battered you guys, and there's that first kind of wave of death that takes place, being in tune and kind of understanding and communing with the dead as well, was there a sense of confusion? Did they seem to not realize what had happened? Was it something that, you know, I wonder, because of the way it took place in this kind of environmental upheaval, if it did just kind of wash away the spirits, help them move to wherever they were going to move to next, and maybe why it's a little more settled there.
Well, maybe it could be that. That's an interesting concept. I think I just became so absorbed with the people who survived, the people who stayed, the people who didn't leave. We all did. Those of us that stayed, a lot of people left. It was just as soon as people could get evacuated out, people were getting out, and I'm one of the ones that stayed. And, you know, those of us that stayed became extremely focused on the recovery effort. So I didn't sense death, like I was saying before, death in or like transitioning spiritual energy, spirit energy. It was more like focusing on what was left and living, and how do we fix this? How do we get enough diapers for babies? You know, that was right. A big issue for a while. There was, especially for the local kids, like, and you know, just there's a lot of kids. It's a thing here to have a lot of children if you're local, to have a lot of progeny. It's traditional. With as many children, it's a status symbol, and it's status of strength and family. I mean, you know, the local community here and on the other islands. So it's like about how to find how many, you need so many diapers, need, you know, so much mosquito repellent to stay for babies, like just stuff like that became all consuming. And the paranormal side of things, I just sensed it in those brief moments I was alone, but I felt it in the land. And it may be right, maybe that's human conscious spirit energy was shifting over, away, blowing way out to sea. I remember there was a moment where I became kind of overwhelmed by it all. I was very, very tired. My body was really beaten down from so much hard labor, not much food, not much water for days and days and then weeks. And it was and so much hard physical labor in the rebuild of it all and the repairing. But I remember looking out at the ocean. It was a full moon, much like now is, you know. And I was sitting there and I just had a moment and I felt like I was a piece of wood cut adrift and just floating out to sea, this lost that found in that moment. And I felt very peaceful. And so maybe that's how the spirits felt too. They felt peaceful because at the end of the day, that stuff happened and there was nothing we could do to stop it. When you absolutely hand over everything to the universe, you don't know if you're going to live, you don't know if you're going to die, you don't know anything. Just in that absolute moment, there's a freedom to it because you experience complete acceptance. That's what I did anyway. The only way to get through it is to just accept it.
Growing up, what triggered you to say that this is the path, this is the way in the life that I want, and following kind of the Wiccan and witchcraft principles?
It's an interesting one too, because it just felt innate. It felt appropriate. It wasn't so much that I was learning things, but remembering things. And there's other spiritual paths that I relate to, and like Buddhism, even the Baha'i faith is something I really learned a little more about that in recent times, and it certainly resonates the principles of how I conduct myself. But witchcraft just seems familiar and creative as well. I like that you could have your own hand in it. When it became my career for all those years, and I was like the poster girl for it for a while, they're one of the poster girls, and certainly quite a dominant one for a while there in the public eye. I didn't enjoy it as much anymore, I don't think. It became something I did, not something I felt. And since stepping away from the public eye, people say, I work as a commercial pilot now. I got up at 2:30 a.m. this morning, flew the newspapers to another island, got to see the super blue blood moon in the sky as I'm flying a plane across the ocean to deliver newspapers to another island. Like, I'm still a witch. I just don't have to work as one anymore. So
yeah, instead of it becoming a career and defining you, you've kind of stepped back and let it become part of who you are again instead of...
Yeah, again, right, exactly. Right. That's the key word, again, because I kept it sort of under wraps through all the years in the band. My spiritual interests were definitely in the lyrics and sometimes how I dressed, but the real practice of it was very private. And then it became my job and I wrote books about it. And then I stepped away from public eye. I trained to be a commercial pilot. I wanted to focus on flying humanitarian aid. I started to do that last year, and then I became the recipient of humanitarian aid. I was helping fly aid missions to Haiti in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew of 2016, and then I became the recipient of aid in 2017. So, paying it forward all the way. But I remember being asked this when I was doing some interviews for my book when it came out in Australia last year, just before the hurricane, and someone said, "What's your greatest magical moment in your career?" Or, your highlight of your career in magic. And I said, "The day it stopped being my career was the highlight."
About a week ago.
I didn't think sorry.
I was just going to say, about a week ago when we were doing speaking and talking about the power of magic and occultism and such, we talked about the power of music. And how even Aleister Crowley would weave intention, I don't know if you want to call it spells or powers, into the written word or the sung word.
Oh, yeah.
You were a musician. Were you doing the same thing? Were you kind of crafting a multi-layered bits where the music was, to the outside it was music?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Without a conscious desire to manipulate or coerce others, but it was a natural and effortless expression of it all. And the guy that I wrote music with in the band, he wasn't a witch, but he was very interested in it all. So yeah, definitely. There's one album we did, Ritual Eternal, that's an independent album, and we recorded that up in the rainforest of northern New South Wales, and that was some pretty heavy magic that went down recording that album. And, I look back and I think, wow, how lucky, what extraordinary experiences to have in life. And I love listening to that album because it just transports me to, the other realm we were accessing during the recording and the writing of it all. But, yeah, absolutely. And then, if people are interested, if anyone's listening that wants to hear anything that I recorded specifically about witchcraft myself, well, then if you go to my website, there are tracks you can listen to from my album Witch Web, which I did after Death Effects, which I think is probably my favorite stuff I've ever done. And there's a song, there's a track there called Lost in the Woods, but it's like a spell set to music, for want of a better way of describing it. But what it highlights when I listen to it is my love of nature and how, to me, nature is magic. And it's accessible to anyone. The language we use to describe it is what kind of carved out the different traditions and paths of perhaps witchcraft and occultism. But it always comes back to the natural world, the universal source, whether that's in a physical expression of a crystal in a tree or a flower or a herb or something, or whether it's, more esoteric, more quantum related. Still, it's our world. It's what we live in. It's the stuff we're made of.
Do you believe that a lot of people use the craft of music to kind of intone spells? I wonder that because I look at some things, and how you connect or you can resonate with music, and it seems weird how it can kind of reach across different ages, cultures, belief systems, and touch people in deeper ways where they can't even explain to you. I can't tell you what it is about this music, but I feel this connection. Do you think that is a kind of magic that they've woven into it purposely, or perhaps more on accident without even realizing what they were doing?
More on accident without realizing, because if someone tangibly and intentionally, well, I'll put it this way, because we always kind of would veer towards, oh, am I being, is there mind control going on if I listen to this song? If you look at it as a positive, there's an artist who I love, Wendy Rule, WendyRule.com is her website. Her music is incredible. She's an amazing witch, occultist. I've known her for decades. Love it to death. Her music is true magic, and she does write spells, incantations to music like I used to, but she does it so well, and I feel transported when I listen to her music. There's a song she wrote, Black Snake, but it's the song of creation. So there are artists out there that conjure with their music and their word, and it's really powerful and really beautiful. And I think as far as, you know, if someone was wanting to dramatize something and be, oh, you know, this song was created, and then, you know, I'm thinking of like old rumors about Led Zeppelin recording with Crowley and, what's the album? Oh, no, it's the Eagles, Hotel California, and Crowley's looking out the window. I remember it's like that out. Or is that, that's Physical Graffiti, Led Zeppelin? I can't remember. Anyway, I remember back to some of those rumors that went around in the 70s about artists, you know, using occultists to control the minds of their fans, and I just think it's fun. If only we could do that, how fun would that be? I don't think it really happens like that, but you only become susceptible to something if you're willing, and generally people kind of conjure themselves listening to music rather than the musician conjuring them.
Would you ever find yourself while writing music almost feeling like you were a conduit or a channel to something else? You necessarily didn't have a plan, but it just, this was the song that came out, you know, pouring out of you, and did that happen often?
I think that's almost every song that I've written. And even, you know, even the book, like even this autobiography, like I look back and I think, how did that come out of me? But it's like giving women that have had children, which I haven't done. That's one of the things I haven't done, is have kids. It's probably why I've done so many other things. They talk about how they have a baby and then they have this thing in front of them, flesh and blood, and they go, God, did that come out of me? Did I make that? My God, you know? It's a little bit like that when you write a book or when you write a song, you're like, did I make that? Because it all of a sudden takes on its own life. And sometimes you wonder, where did that come from? Did it come from me or through me? And I think energy, you know, isn't it a scientific fact that energy can't be destroyed? It changes form. So if all the energy in the world already exists, then we're always conduits, channels, reinterpreting, rebirthing stuff. It's always coming through us, not from us, which is good. We just put a different spin on it as individuals.
I'd like, from your perspective, I mean, you seem to be very much in the light, especially with the way that you comport yourself after kind of giving up the limelight on a lot of this. You are working in aid and helping people and constantly doing things of good. Is there really a dark magic, a black magic, or is that, again, just stuff of myths and legends and romanticized in novels and movies?
You know, I'm trying to think. There are a couple of times where I've walked into spaces and I've just gone, whoa. You know, like that, oh, it feels like there's a hand inside your stomach and it's just twisting you. And I step away from those physical locations. So what I've learned as a human living on the planet is I still think people do bad things, but attributing dark powers, demonic powers to things is more the stuff of the person's interpretation of that energy I was talking about before. You know, the energy is how we interpret it, the voice we give it, the shape we create for it, the vessel we become for it. The energy is the energy. But having said that, I have sort of sometimes just not felt great, you know, I'm talking paranormally, like, and thought that there is a dark malevolence essence or presence here that I need to step away from. But that's what I can do. I can physically step away from it, and it's gone. So, again, it's like your willingness to interact with it gives it form and shape. Does that make sense?
It does. I just, you know, we've heard so many stories over the years, and, of course, you know, where there's good, there's bad. Where there's light, there's dark. And you hear about the ramifications of you know, evoking dark energy, dark spirits, dark spells, and that it always seems to revisit upon the person that sent it, you know, a hundredfold or threefold or whatever fold, but whatever's coming back to you never seems pleasant enough that I would think people would really want to engage in something.
Well, you gotta look at what at the people that are purporting to do that sort of stuff in the first place. You mm-hmm. know, like, they're generally not very happy. You know, so I still think it reflects the individual. You know.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have to do a quick break. Fiona Horn is our guest. Mm-hmm. The new book is out and available. It's her autobiography, The Naked Witch, Fiona Horn. We have a link up to that. If you go to darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals link, you'll find her book there in our Amazon store. We've handpicked every one of the different books from all of our authors so that they're easy and accessible for you to grab and find. We'll take a break. We'll come back and continue our journey with Fiona Horn right after this.
Beyond the darkness.
This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. My guest today, Fiona Horn. The book is out and available, and we've got a link up to it at darknessradio.com under our Killer Deals link, so make sure you find it there. We'll also have a link to Fiona's website and other ways for you to keep in touch and find more information about our guests. You can find that right on today's podcast, right on the link, so go check that out as well. Fiona, this, man, what a remarkable life and a remarkable world you've been a part of, and from performing in front of tens of thousands of people and meeting some of the biggest celebrities in the world. And did you feel like you were being caught up in something bigger than yourself when you realized these kind of abilities and the skills and gifts that you'd been given in life?
Well, it's interesting that you put it that way, because, and the book really discusses this, I didn't think I was especially gifted or skilled at anything. If anything, my unusual life forged itself from an innate feeling of being unworthy, of not special, of good, but just not good enough, you know? And that moment, well, that kind of sense of self-inadequacy is what fueled me to try to somehow be good enough. And that's why it's a classic kind of symptom of an overachiever. You know, every time I did one thing, it was like, what next? And I just kept chasing this, not because I thought I was great or especially gifted, because I thought I wasn't. But somehow I've ended up here at this point in my life, a commercial pilot, flying aid, and yes, I was a rock star witch, and I was a TV show host and an actor in film and radio show host, and I've written 9 books about witchcraft, and now my autobiography, and I was a heroin addict too for a while there, and homeless on the streets at 14, and sexually abused by my grandfather, and I can keep, you know, the book goes into it all. All the stuff that I did was not because I was especially gifted, but because the one thing I was good at, the book says this, and I realized this, I had to give myself this, even though the dialogue usually was, you're good, Fiona, but you're just not good enough. Here you go, have this, just so it can be taken away. That mentality went on, that dialogue, inner dialogue went on for a long time, but the one thing I would give myself that I was really, really good at is not giving up. You know, someone said it to me the other day, they read my book and they said, God, that Chumbawamba song, you know, I get knocked down, I get up again. You know, that was my song, you know, and it's really, life is a, it's not about how many times you get knocked down, it's about how many times you get back up that really counts. And I can look back and see that now, that I always got back up. And from the outside, my life might have looked pretty glamorous and extraordinary, but the inner turmoil was very dark. And if people read my story and relate to that and then see that, you know, I still managed to keep turning my face towards the sun, so to speak, let the shadows fall behind me, then if they can learn something from my journey and all the mistakes I made, then I would be happy. That's really all I hoped when I wrote the book, was that it would be useful for people. Entertaining, of course, because that would be important for a book to be entertaining, but for it to be useful, a useful tool. And the people that have read it, you know, it's been out in Australia for a while and internationally online for a while now. It's in bookstores in America. But the feedback, the overwhelming feedback I get is that the people found my book helpful, useful, reassuring, inspiring. And dare I say that I've said it's a good read, because I've had a pretty wild life and I'd like to think I'm only halfway through it, you know. So
yeah, I'm with you. I just turned 50.
You know, the beginning of... Yeah, right. Well, the beginning of the next book is would have to be the hurricanes, hey? Because literally that would be the beginning of the rest of my life, was those two bloody hurricanes. You've done all that, Fiona. Now how about surviving two catastrophic hurricanes and moving forward?
Well, you've certainly got the abilities. You know, there are a lot of people, Fiona, that have lost faith across the world. And if you just watch the news and you see people are kind of downtrodden or walking through a haze, and they've lost perspective or interest in religions, things that, let's face it, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you're, you know, a fan of Christianity or Judaism or any of the other isms, there's a breakdown. And since that breakdown began, it seems that people have become more disjointed and disconnected, and they're looking for a way to connect. Do you think that looking into Wiccan, and I know witchcraft has such a negative connotation attached to it because of overblown, overpublicized stories and Hollywood's iteration of it. But do you think that is a place that people that are lost may find direction again?
Well, you know, I came out, for want of a better way of describing it, I came out of the broomstick closet 20 years ago. And out of the broom closet, so to speak. But 20 years ago, and witchcraft and Wicca is a spiritual path or spiritual journey with many paths, and Wicca, the religion of witchcraft, you know, there's a lot less misinformation out there now. And I mean, everyone knows a proud self-proclaimed witch now. They're on TV series. Like, it's, you know, it's almost normal. Oh yeah, Wiccan, witch. That word doesn't bring as much fear into the minds of people now as it used to, or 20 years ago. That's what I've seen.
Right.
Which is a good thing. But the way I relate to witchcraft is as a spiritual path, not a religion. I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person. So does the answer lie in organized religions? Maybe for some, not for others. I think there's an awakening on the earth. It depends where you turn your head and look. You know, I don't watch the news and I don't read the papers. I deliver the newspapers, you know, by plane to the other islands, but I don't read them. I mean, the media is a bit of a demonic entity right now. The mainstream media, I don't watch. I don't watch reality TV. That advertises and celebrates the most poorest of human behavior and attributes. I don't expose myself to that. I don't listen to radio, respectfully, I say that. If I listen to podcasts, it's good stuff like yours, or an aviation-related one, but I don't just put on the radio and listen to ads. I try to, you know, keep my life clean and minimalist. I don't expose myself to all that shit anymore. So I see a lot of good in the world. A lot of, like I said, after the storms, I saw the people stepping up and helping each other. The world I live in, for the challenges it presents, is still an amazing, miraculous place, and I'm grateful to be here for all its wonders and for all its pain. You know, it's incredible to be here. So I don't see a deadening of the people. I see a purging. And, you know, if you want to live, if you want to be happy, you have that choice. You've got to do it.
Right. I agree with you on that. I just, you know, I'm always curious how people respond and react to it. And I know I'll get emails that will tell me, oh, are you trying to sway people into witchcraft and Wiccan? Well, yeah, I think if people are lost and seeking some kind of connection again.
Well, yeah.
That's a much better aspect than, you know, a lot of what people are falling into, and the hate speech and the anger and the resentment that they're currently embroiled in. Witchcraft and Wiccan atmosphere seems to be, once you get past the thinly veiled lies of Hollywood and dramatization, it seems to be a very powerful source for people to find power within themselves and within around their environments.
Well, even more from my perspective, it's not the power within you, it's the power around you that is natural and wants you to be prosper and be happy. Certainly, you know, we talked about living on the planet half a century. It's like not that I'm growing older, I'm getting better at living. The book carries that message too. There are amazing, the power around you when you learn how to live in the present moment, accept it, be grateful for it, even like the spell casting. If I was to do a spell now, I never do a spell asking for something for myself. It's like, it's only so that I can show up to life capable, like physically fit, mentally ready, emotionally whole, to be of service. You know, and I've redefined my life to come from that perspective. It's not about me, it's about us and we. And, you know, parts of the witchcraft community live like that and act like that and behave like that, and others don't. I mean, there's no one answer. Everyone, there's many, many paths to feeling at peace and to feel fulfilled. It's up to the individual to find the one that resonates for them. I just hope that people have realize this is what I hope my book shares, that you're worth the effort. Like, if there are those days where you just feel lost and bored, sad, depressed, broken, defeated, well, they're the best days to do something about it, because you've got somewhere to go with it. The only way when you're that low is the only way to go is up. So, you know, there was something my biological mother said to me when I met her, because I'm adopted. The book talks about that too. But she said, Fiona, when you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, crawl through it and light the bloody thing yourself. And I was like, yes, that's so true. And, you know, when you talked earlier, Dave, about me having gifts and things to be able to do all the stuff I've done, well, I said I never operated from that premise, but there is one thing I have in me genetically which I find interesting. When I did find out my biological origins as an adopted child, I found out that I'm Hungarian Jew and German. And it's like my most recent ancestors were in Second World War. My father was, you know, shot in the leg, loaded onto a cart of corpses. His friends saw him moving and, you know, he's already survived a concentration camp, and he was pulled off the cart of corpses, and he was alive enough to walk, and then he was basically used as a bomb detector to sweep the snow for 400 miles, like, you know, and he kept going and he survived. And he found a box of butter in the snow and he shared that butter with his friends, and out of 400 men, three of them survived, and those three moved to Australia, emigrated after the Second World War, and that's my father. Met my mother in Australia. But my mother survived the exodus of the Germans, the East Germans, from the advancing Russians at the end of the war. I mean, I have this strong survivor instinct in me from my genetic heritage. And maybe that's what's given me the ability to just not give up. Just like my father didn't. And like my mother didn't, when they all had to, you know, she was very, very young, that they had to all basically run from the Germans. I'm sorry, from the Russians. So, you know, it's
almost genetically predisposed into you, this kind of can-do, move-forward attitude. But that's something that is obtainable,
but
as you say.
I can't take any credit for it. It's
right.
It's just kind of what I work with, you know, what I go for. So I found out later in life I have that in my genes, and it explained a couple of things, you know.
Would you use the magics to get you where you wanted to be? I mean, and is there a difference between magic and setting intention? Are those one and the same, an interchangeable term, if you will?
Well, when I was less experienced at living, I used to do spells and rituals and things to affect change, thinking that I could micromanage the universe and make stuff happen like that. But, you know, the book has a little part in it where I worked out the secret to making your spells work 100% of the time. And it's not about micromanaging and controlling the universe. It's only asking, and this might sound, it might resonate with some people and it might not, but really the way to make your spells work 100% of the time is to ask for nothing for yourself, to only ask, like I mentioned earlier in the show, to only ask to be fit and able to show up and be of service. And then the universe just takes care of everything. So I don't do anything motivated by money, acclaim, recognition.
At this point in your life, or overall?
No, at this point in my life. What okay. I learned from the overall was that overall doesn't work. It's not sustainable. You might fluke some moments of perceived success and results, but you're empty inside. You don't feel connected to it. It's not enough. And so you go for more. And it just ends up, you implode. And the sustainable way of living is what I've learned anyway from a magic perspective, is what I just described, is to just get out of your own way. So I don't do manipulative spells for myself or others or anything. I just, the magical life I live is knowing that every moment, every breath is a work of magic. And sometimes you can get sort of like a few days ago, like I had some issues going on with my job that was really challenging, and I got depressed, and I used to think depression was a natural state of being, but I've learned that I don't have to be depressed every day, that I can actually wake up and feel good and enjoy my life. But I did get very sad and depressed over something happened with my job, and I just knew it would pass, and I knew that if I just stayed conscious in the present moment and willing to allow the situation to shift, it would, and it did. That's what I've learned, that the best act of magic is actually, it's not about the art of creating change with will, as Crowley would say. It's the art of being willing, will as in willing to do the work, to be grateful and be of service.
I know you don't use
and
that.
You really have a magical life.
You don't use magic to attain the things that you want at this point, but was that part of your practice when you were going through and you had that desire, I want more, were you employing the magic arts?
Yes, and I used to write books about it and you know, wrote hundreds of spells of, oh, you know, if you want him to propose, get a clock and wind ivy around it and he'll propose faster and put it in the light of a white candle under the full moon, blah, blah, blah. But all those, I mean, they're creative and fun and beautiful, but now the rituals, like the spell working like that I would do, a more an act of celebration, a ritual of gratitude and celebration that honors what is, and I let the universe decide what is to come. And
can I ask you how I use the function as a spell? Now you just mentioned a spell. If you want him to propose to you, wind ivy around this and put it under the full moon and so on. How do you, you know, was that passed through the ages, a spell for something like that, or is that something that comes to you?
Well, elements of like that were drawn from the 1800s. People used to gift ivy to people, newlyweds, and they would grow pots of ivy by their front door because the ivy would grow all over the house and bind their love. That was the meaning of it, and a lot of wedding rings in those days were engraved with ivy. Again, it's binding your love. Because the ivy, the plant, binds. So again, you know, the human looking at the natural world, oh, that'll, if that ivy binds that hedge, if it grew all over the house, then surely it would bind their love. And then it goes becoming, you know, folklore fact. And a lot of spells and magic tap into that. So when you know, in all the years of writing about spells and all the books that are out there now and all the people talking about it now, you learn that there are corresponding aspects to certain crystals, certain colours, certain times of the day, phases of the moon. And all these things are magical elements. I've always used the analogy of, like, if you want to make a chocolate cake, you know, you have flour, cacao powder, sugar, milk, you know, eggs, butter, and it all is out there on the bench. Now, does a chocolate cake exist? Not yet. It's in your mind. So you combine all those things, and then you,
yes,
and then it's in this pot, and then you stick it in the oven, and that injection of heat cooks it. And all of a sudden, out pops the chocolate cake that didn't exist until you put those ingredients together and maybe set your intention to do it and then threw some energy into it. That's how a spell works. You line up the ingredients, you have the intention, the goal, and then you inject the energy, whether it's, like I use the analogy of putting cake in the oven. Well, the energy of a witch's circle would be, say, in a sacred circle, you'd run around and raise power or, you know, play music really loud and stamp your feet or whatever it is to get that energy, and then you project it into the object or the thing and or the vision. And that's how all that's supposed to work. Now, that's all amazing, and it can and does work. Me personally, where I'm at in my life, half a century and a bit into it, is I don't get such a buzz out of doing that anymore. I fire dance now. I fire dance a lot. I love that. Love fire dancing for an audience or not. I'm fire dancing on the cover of the book. That, to me, is an act of magic, working with the elemental energy of fire, carving its way around me as I dance with it. So but I just don't do spells to get stuff anymore. I do spells and rituals in celebration of what I have, what I lost, and what I want to.
So you do spells more of what we would consider gratitude, spells of thankfulness.
More rituals.
Right.
We call them rituals.
Now, yeah. You know, it's interesting to me.
Gives me a wonderful life. Like I have this, you know, I have very little money, green money stuff in the bank, like very, very little, and I don't need it. I live in an amazing home. I'm driving a car. I get to fly this awesome plane without the headache of owning it. I just had to learn how to fly it and get all my ratings and be a commercial pilot. But I get to do a lot of really amazing stuff, and I don't need money, or I don't want money. I just work hard, and somehow everything takes care of itself.
When you were talking about the different elements, the clock, the ivy, the, you know, stones, whatever you might be using, I've often wondered, when people are proficient with communicating with the other side, whether they're using bones or tea leaves or, you know, any of the tools of the trade, I often wonder if those are used more as a focal point because they're insecure about their abilities, whereas they're drawing on whatever the image is and the message is, that's within them all the time, but they're using these tools. So when you're using, I'm wondering if, you know, looking at the clock and listen, the clock represents time and that I want this time and that the ivy represents the binding of these things together. So what I'm doing is I'm setting a more concise intention in my brain. Instead of just sending out to the universe, bring me love, you're doing something and you're giving it a focal visualization to make it happen. And if you're doing that, that's what's that's part of the magic. So the magic is always within us. It's giving somebody the stimulation.
And that's, you know, we touched on that a little bit when I was talking about energy is what it is. It's the vessel we give it that allows it to express itself. You know, so a spell is kind of a vessel for the energy for it to be and do something, you know. I read tarot cards. I've done it for years, decades. I have clients. I've got the same deck that I've had for, you know, like, when did I get given it? In my 20s, early 20s, 30-something years I've used this deck. And the deck in of itself is so familiar to me. It's like a friend. And I actually, believe it or not, I have two of this deck now because when I moved to the island 6 years ago, my original deck that was by then 24 years old had been shuffled so many times. I mean, in the book, there's a picture of my original deck and the new one. I ended up finding, they don't make my deck anymore, but I found one on eBay and I used the newer one, which has still been shuffled by now 1,000 times in the last 6 years, but I needed cards with a coating still on them because the humidity in the islands, I couldn't shuffle my old cards. But I keep one card from the old deck and the old deck's in a you know, sealed container so it doesn't continue to rot. And I use the newer deck, but it's the same deck. But it's familiarity. When I read for my clients, it's a combination of the symbols of the card, the colours, what's left of the colours. It triggers something in me, but really, again, with readings, this is an example of things coming from me. Through me, not from me. The from me advice tends to be the practical advice I might offer a client. The through me advice is the more psychic-oriented things where you know, I might feel deeply compelled to tell someone something and it's helpful for them. And I don't really know where that's come from. It just comes through me. And the cards for me are a tactile, tangible presence in a very kind of etheric experience, which is a reading. And I still do that. I still do readings. I mean, you know, I don't really advertise it massively. I mean, I'd say now, like if you go to my website, fionahorn.com, and you click on chat, C-H-A-T, in the menu, that's how you can get in touch with me. But I don't really advertise it massively. Most of my clients are word of mouth referrals, which I like.
But do you believe that the cards in that case, they're used as a tool to help facilitate or engage your memory, your imagination, and kind of stimulate the communication between whatever's trying to pass a message on, correct? It's not so much that the cards are as important.
Like some people, like I've done tarot reading workshops, like card reading workshops when I appeared at Hexfest, which is the one witchcraft event that I appear at. As much as I've stepped away from the public eye, there's one that happens every year in New Orleans. It's happening this year. Hexfest.com is the website if anyone's interested in going. It's a wonderful festival that brings people from all different magical paths and cultural traditions together. A real celebration of the community of us, you know, of all of us in all our colours and forms and shapes and ideas. But when I did a tarot reading workshop there, it was, you know, I encouraged the students in my class to not overemphasize the meanings of the cards. Don't memorize the book that comes with the cards. Just relax and let your mind soften and trust what comes to you. Your first instinct is always the right one.
As we're wrapping up, Fiona, and I appreciate the time you've given us today. I know you've had to make special accommodations just to get this phone call
out to us. I'm still sitting in the car, Dave.
Yeah.
In the sun.
I see that.
I can see a cell tower. I've got signal because I can actually see the cell tower. That's the only reason I have signal, and I had to drive 20 minutes to get here to talk to you.
This is the time.
That's making a phone call in the islands now.
This is the time maybe riding a broom would have been a little bit easier. You could have just hovered over there.
I could have just got in the plane and circled, put myself in a procedure hold or something over the tower, but some people would have wondered what I was doing. A plane is much more comfortable than a broomstick, Dave, I have to say.
I know, and you've got that in your book as well, talking about the changes in your life. Has there been a pretty radical change in the world of witchcraft and Wicca over the years, or has it always kind of remained pretty true to itself?
I think there's a change. I think in our community, and everyone has their own experiences, my personal experience is our community of witches has become more tolerant. When I came out of the broom closet, it seemed there was a lot of divisiveness. And my little statement, and I put it in the book too, back in those days, I used to think, who needs Christians to burn me at the stake? My own community does it to me every day. People were trying to find an identity, and sometimes that meant pointing the finger at others and finding fault with them. But you know, when you point the finger at someone else, there's three fingers pointing back at yourself. So I think our community has evolved, you know, in the last 20 years. It's been around for longer than that. But in the last 20 years, I think there's been an awakening of tolerance and respect for each other's differences, a celebration of our differences. And that's really what makes us stronger as a magical community, is respecting each other and allowing each other to forge our paths as we determine. And if we're part of the religion of witchcraft or a particular tradition like Alexandrian, Gardnerian, Dianic, all the different traditions, then be true to those and love them and be the best version of yourself that you can be in them and respect others who are different. And that's really what... So I feel like there's a strengthening of our community because we allow ourselves to be ourselves now.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Fiona Horn. The book is called The Naked Witch, an autobiography. We have a link up to that again. If you visit darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals tab, you'll find the book there. And we'll also have a link up to Fiona's website. So if you would like to get a reading or would like to reach out to her, follow up with what she's doing in her career and in her life, you can certainly find her easy enough. We thank you very much for your time. Remember, be kind to yourself. Love yourself, so that it's easier to love others, and then the magic will come. All you need to do is open up your heart and your soul. Stop looking at the anger. Stop pointing the finger of righteous indignation at everyone else, and look at what you can do to start to change the world from within your own paradigm. We'll be back again tomorrow with you right here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.